GNC 578. It's Tuesday, May 25th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a primer of the Tech Podcast Network. It went great to be back in Honolulu. Got a great show for you. Strap in. Here it comes.
All right, people, I need a go, no-go for the Geek News Central podcast. Digital archive recorders.
We're go fly.
Microphone.
We're go fly.
Video feed.
Go.
Web browser.
No.
RSS data stream aggregator.
Go fly.
Interflux Toddism suppressor.
All right, I'm confused.
Host readiness check.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
The Geek News Central podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are ready to go. Cue Todd in...
Five.
Button, who's got the button?
Four.
There is no cause for alarm.
Three.
Everybody hold on to something.
Two.
Just press the button.
One.
It's showtime.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from the beautiful state of Hawaii via the Geek News Central studio overlooking Honolulu. Hey everyone, welcome to the show. My name is Todd Cochran. Of course, I want to encourage you to get over to geeknewscentral.com. Check out all the great content over there. Check out our archive podcast available via the podcast link on the website. I want to give a warm welcome to the Ohana, all of you that are longtime listeners of the show. And if you are a new listener or viewer of the show, I want to welcome you to the Ohana, being part of the family here. Of course, we are covered in 165 countries worldwide. We have people tuning in a variety of fashions. But the best way to stay up to date on what's happening here is to get subscribed to our newsletter. The newsletter contains all the content that I'm going to talk about tonight, including all of the hyperlinks that is submitted by listeners like you, and things that I have found to talk about during the show. If you have comments on tonight's show, geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline, of course, is +1-619-342-7365. That's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and is available for you. You can get subscribed to the show. You can find the big subscribe orange box on Geek News Central, either through the podcast link for the RSS feed, through iTunes, Zoom Marketplace. You can follow me on Twitter. Of course, we're going to have a lot of great stuff coming in the special event feed. So if you're not subscribed to that feed, get subscribed to the special event feed, because I'm going to start pushing out all the great content that I recorded at Ford starting probably tomorrow night. So many of you have been asking me, where is the video from the last show? Well, I flew out of southern Michigan. I actually flew out of Detroit Sunday. And the bandwidth at mom's house was not really sufficient for me to push out the show in an orderly fashion. So as we speak, one of the computers is actually uploading the show from Friday to YouTube. So that should be up there sometime later tonight, and along with probably in the morning, the video from this show, and then we'll get it distributed on techpodcast.tv. and all the other locations I distribute through the RSS feed. Tonight, we're recording on the new computer that has been delivered by Sweetwater. And so far, everything looks good. We'll see how that goes at the end of the show. I'm pretty happy with this machine because it is silent. You cannot hear it run. I mean, it is. They have done an amazing job with keeping this thing just... micro quiet. It's sitting right next to, really right down here, 2 feet from me, and barely a hum out of the machine. So we'll see how good it does for auto recording. We're feeding it via the FireWire port and then recording to Adobe Edition. So we'll keep our fingers crossed, and you guys will be the first ones to really be able to tell how the audio recording sounded on this new machine. Of course, the TriCaster's pushing to out to the internet, and those of you on Ustream, want to thank you for joining the show tonight as well. Well, I had a great visit with my mom. It was two full days, really three nights, 2 days, and I had to leave just at the crack of dawn, really 4 o'clock in the morning. I had to drive out to get back to Detroit and then get on a flight to that connected in Chicago, then on into Honolulu. First time I've had to fly a 9-hour burner in quite a while, and what was nice about that 9-hour burner home was I probably slept 4 or 5 hours on the way back, so it was awesome. It really was. So I had a nice visit. Look forward to doing that hopefully more often as I'm getting out there. Now, we had a great meetup Saturday evening at Applebee's. There's just so many people to say hello. And to, of course, the guys at the iPad show, want to say hello to them and wish them well with their show. I want to thank Barry for coming down from Grand Rapids, Mike from coming down from Grand Haven. And of course, Barry Cance of Raw Voice came down, and I was expecting Barry to roll in maybe about 3 o'clock and actually stop at the house early and I'd give him the address and we were going to just, have a little chat he didn't show up. And about 5:30, just a little while before the actual meetup was going to start, he let me know that car, his Volkswagen that he's drove for years, his Bug, had broken down about 30 minutes south of his house. He had actually had his wife come and get him after he had it towed to a dealership. And then she took him to the airport and he got a rental car and actually came on down. Hardcore dedication. Thanks, Barry, for coming out. And even though it took you 4.5 hours, what normally would be a 2-hour trip plus a rental car, Barry gets the award for definitely being the most dedicated. Mike is the award for coming the farthest, driving down the farthest. And I want to thank those guys for coming out Saturday. We had a real nice kind of meetup at Applebee's, just talk shop a little bit. And it's fun to, and everyone was podcasters, so that was kind of cool. To be able to just kind of talk podcasting and share with information with one another. Hey, the special insider that I recorded, yes, it's in the camera. Matter of fact, the camera is right here and, the memory sticks are still inside it. I have not downloaded anything from it. We'll start doing that tomorrow, but, we'll get these, I have to get the videos from Ford up. And then I'll work at getting the insider. It's got about 10 different pieces of video content. So if you have become an insider here at Geek News Central by going to geeknewscentral.com/insider, you'll definitely be getting the direct email with the link to actually to watch this video. It's not too late. If you want to become an insider between now and the time that I put the video up, I think you'll get a real deep inside look of basically where I grew up, really it's going to give you some real deep insider information. So I look forward to sharing that with you here later in the week as I get that published. Of course, you can get over to geeknewscentral.com and /offers. Check that out. You may have noticed on the website at geeknewscentral.com, I have an ad up there. It's iParenting Top Award winner, Your Baby Can Read. Now, if we've got any parents or grandparents in the audience, I think you guys should check this out. This is an amazing program. Talk to a few people that have actually been using it. It's the pricing to get started starts at $14.95 for a subscription. And, of course, read the terms and details on this. But if you want to get your child started off right and really get a jump on reading, and learning pronunciation and so forth, you definitely want to check this program out. Again, iParenting Top Award winner. It's called Your Baby Can Read. And you can find information about this at yourbabycanread.com/podcast, or just click on the link at Geek News Central and give it a try. So a great gift for grandparents to give someone that has a newborn in the home, and a baby shower gift, you name it, this would really fit in well, and the price is right. So definitely check it out, and if you've subscribed to it, let me know. Let me know how it's worked out for you by using their program. But I just wanted to share that real quick. But you can find more information about that at geeknewscentral.com/offers. Hey, definitely going to be, looks like everything's firmed up for Rochester, New York, and I'm going to be there the week of June 14th. So, Sal, we're going to hold you to this place that you're saying is fantastic to go eat. Looking forward to hitting the local places there. So what I really want, and I know Buffalo is known for chicken wings, but I think Rochester has to be famous for something. So let me know what that famous food is and the great places to eat in the Rochester area. I'm going to be there for, well, I fly in Saturday night. And then I'm going to be there all the way through Friday and then fly out very early Saturday morning to come home at the end of the week, I think the 19th or something like that. And so I'm looking forward to really kind of exploring an area I've never been to before, and hope that you guys will get me clued in on where to go in Rochester. Hey, I got an I had asked you guys to send in submissions for GoToMeeting, and I asked for your feedback on what this product has meant to you, and basically a testimonial. I got a number of submissions, but the one that really hit me the most was from William out of Miami, Florida. He says, Todd, I spend over 10 days a month on the road meeting existing clients and trying to recruit new ones. Meeting with existing clients usually takes hours of road time with only a 60-minute meeting that often get canceled. The rest of the time I spend on the road, I'm trying to drum up new business. Since I have started using GoToMeeting, I spend less than 3 days a month now on the road and can meet all of my current clients in a 1 to 2 day period online and use the rest of that time to build my client base. Now, I don't know what kind of business he's in. It sounds like maybe sales or something, but he said, GoToMeeting saves me several $1,000s each month in travel expenses and has allowed me to increase my sales each quarter to an additional $250,000. That's impressive. He's increased his sales each quarter to an additional $250,000. He says, thank you for GoToMeeting, William Briggs out of Miami, Florida. William, my friend, I'm going to pay for 3 months of your GoToMeeting service. That is an absolute fantastic testimonial. To think that you are earning or actually putting additional dollars into your pocket. And, you know, you don't say contribute completely to GoToMeeting, but from going from 10 days a month of meeting on the road to now doing less than 3 days a month on the road and then meeting with your clients online is pretty remarkable. It really is. And it goes to show you the power of saving time and money by, you know, using this great product. So thank you for your testimony, and thank you for being a loyal customer of GoToMeeting. And I definitely, just based on your story here, it resonated huge with me. Sounds like the type of money you're making, you probably don't need me to pay for your GoToMeeting license, but this is what this was all about, was getting feedback from folks that are using the product in order to, you know, provide, you know, an alternate view to the audience here on this product. And you guys all know that I use GoToMeeting as well, and it's a great product. And as a listener of this show, you can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. That's a month of unlimited online meetings free. And for this special offer, you visit GoToMeeting.com/techpodcast. And what I'm going to do next month is I'm going to do this again. I'm going to reach out and find out if we can get some more testimonials. You know, we got some already, but I'm going to let everyone resubmit in June, and we'll set a target date of June, the show on, let's see, probably when I get back from Rochester, probably the best time. So the live show that's recorded on Monday, the 21st of June, we'll do another one of these. We'll give away another 3-month subscription to GoToMeeting, courtesy of me. I'm paying for it. Just send in your testimonies. And, of course, those of you who are using GoDaddy, we're looking for your testimonies as well. So, again, get a free 30-day trial. GoToMeeting.com/techpodcast. Now, speaking of GoToMeeting, you guys know that you can save a lot of money. And I actually got an email from one of the listeners saying, Todd, I tried to use some of your codes. I had $110 worth of merchandise, and I wasn't able to use a code on renewals. Okay, here's the skinny on using GoDaddy on renewals. The only code that works for .com renewals is ComSale. Okay, that's the one you have to use to save money on .com renewals. All right, so ComSale is the code to use. Generally for renewals, some of my codes for like hosting renewals, that type of stuff, the codes won't work. This is largely for new purchases. So again, you can save 10% by using the code Todd on non-domain orders. Geek5 will save you 15% on any order, $20 or more. Aloha will save you $20 off any order $75 or more. Again, that Todd 20 code will save you 20% on 1 year shared hosting accounts. And yet, that's the best GoDaddy savings yet. So a list of codes are all on the website. I have them linked up there. So at geeknewscentral.com. They're on the, basically you can go right in there and find them real easy by going into the Second Commonwealth website. And there's a link there. It says GoDaddy promo codes. So, or on the offers page, they're there as well at geeknewscentral.com/offers. So, anyway, hey, thanks for GoDaddy for being a longtime sponsor here. Again, if you're looking for domain names, dedicated servers, virtual dedicated servers, whatever it may be, GoDaddy is the place to go. I stand behind their product, use it, live it, breathe it, and save money with my own codes as well. Okay, let me look at my list here. I talked about Ford, talked about being with at mom this past weekend, about the Insider that's forthcoming, talked about Rochester on the week of the 14th. Covered the GoDaddy meeting winner. So really all that's left is if you're looking for a cool shirt like this one, it says Ohana with geeknewscentral.com underneath it. Go to our Cafe Press store at cafepress.com/Ohana store. That's being run by Sam. I don't run that. It's being run by Sam, one of our peers from Albuquerque, New Mexico. And if you've got a design you want to submit to Sam to put up in the Ohana store, he'll feel happy to do that if the design meets his approval. I saw some Twitter stuff going on, too, where people were using the hashtags Ohana and hashtag GNC this past week. So track the Ohana and track what's going on at GNC by using the hashtags Ohana, the hashtag GNC, and, of course, favorite the website over on Facebook. All right, I think that's it. Let me go ahead and get into the regular content tonight. I got a stack of stuff here for you, and I tell you, it's a nice night here in Honolulu. It's absolutely, it's been a beautiful day. The trade winds have been up. Just couldn't ask for really better weather to come home to. Hey, one of a lot of an article we're on Geek News Central that has gotten a lot of traffic today. And, boy, the comments have been really flying in as well. See if I can bring it up on the website here. And let me switch to that, and then we'll bring that in, is really talking about Linux and music. This is written by Andrew, one of the contributing authors over at Geek News Century. He says, last night I downloaded some music from Amazon for the first time, and I was both irritated and presently surprised by the experience. I'd gone to Amazon because I'm not an iPod owner and wanted to get some DRM-free music for playing via a DLNA media server and also my Palm Pre. He says, I know this is a tech site, but just in case you're interested in tracks where he basically talks about what he bought. He says, as I was downloading a number of tracks, I had to use Amazon's MP3 downloader, which I didn't like the sound of as I run Linux. However, I was plenty surprised to see that Amazon offers the downloader for four flavors of Linux, including OpenSUSE 11.2. And being that I'm still on 11.1, he said, I tried the 11.2 version, but that didn't work. Too many missing dependencies. If there's two things wrong with Linux, it's fragmentation and dependency beep. So I had to borrow my wife's laptop and downloaded the Windows version, which worked flawlessly. Anyway, he goes on to say, oh, I can see that if you're a Windows user, experience is flawless and gives the best benefit of DRM-free music. And he says, as a Linux user, he's slightly disappointed he had to be on the latest version. And if you weren't, the options were pretty limited. Great that Amazon is at least supporting Linux in some shape, though. So this is a dilemma he's running into being a Linux user in that, you know, trying to get access to the music that he wants to and download DRM-free stuff was not an easy process. So maybe we can help Andrew out. And those of you that are using Linux, what are you guys using for where are you getting music at? How are you downloading it? Where are you buying it from? How's that process working for you? And if anyone in the Ohana has any suggestion for Andrew, we'll, of course, pass it on to him. And you can check out the comments on the blog at Geek News Central. But Andrew is, again, one of the contributing bloggers over at GNC. How many of you watched Lost last night? How many of you watched the last 2.5-hour episode? Boy, my family was right there to the end. And, kind of a weird ending. And I probably should have covered this in the beginning of the show, but I don't know. I'd like to hear you. Those of you that are Lost fans, love to hear your comments. We won't interrupt the tech show anymore, but lots of opinions out there. I kind of was semi-happy with the ending, but I'm sure that some of you were like, ugh, probably were not. But feel free to email your comments privately. We'll talk about that. Geeknews@gmail.com. Hey, next article up is an article over that I found out at masternewmedia.org talking about website monitoring. You know, one thing that I am very anal about is running my own dedicated server. You never know when something is going to go wrong. And you can be caught off guard, middle of the night, the server goes down. And it could happen for a multitude of reasons. And generally, my machine has been pretty heavy, solid, knock on wood. Of course, that's famous last words. But he's got a great list of tools and services that you can use to basically monitor your website, make sure things are working the way they should. Lots of different things to test availability. If my server goes down, what happens is I get an email. My pager goes, actually not my pager, but my phone rings. I get a text message. The service I subscribe to really keeps an eye on things, and they basically test when it's down. Now, you know, whether or not I'm near a computer when it happens is a different story. But knock on wood, I've been pretty lucky, and I've been near a PC when my website has went down for the few times that it has. But nothing will set more panic in you than having a server or a website have an issue. So, but you won't know most of the time unless you have some sort of monitoring software or monitoring service. And you can produce some prevention by using some of the tools he's got here, and also subscribe to some services that will monitor your website and let you know when it does go down. For no other reason, sometimes it's not your fault. Sometimes it's your web hosting provider, and none of them are perfect. And even most of them say 99.99% uptime. If you do the math on that on a yearly basis, I think they can be down like something like 20 hours in a year and still maintain that 99.99% reliability rate. So I have a link to this and, of course, all the articles on in the show notes at geeknewscentral.com following the show and in the newsletter that I sent out. Hey, Twitter today really has basically thrown down the gauntlet. Twitter's, as one article wrote, or the headline in one specific website, at All Things Digital, they said, Twitter's free love era comes to an end. Time for developers and publishers to pay up. This is kind of interesting. Twitter is booting anyone that's running any type of ad network or any type of stream that looks like it's sponsored type post. They have decided to go, not necessarily go after, but do some sort of agreements with companies that are making money off of Twitter. He says, if you do have to pay up, there are a couple of different ways to do it. You could cut Twitter in via revenue split or agree to license its data stream, which has generally been free up until now. Or you could use to agree Twitter's own promoted tweets ad service or some combination of the above. The CEO says that the company hasn't established a minimum fee of revenue split or any other metrics for payment. So a lot of this is going to get hammered out case by case. So get in there early. And they're saying that Twitter's only focused on sites and services that sell ads against its streams. So if your service doesn't generate revenue or does so using something other than ads, i.e. subscriptions, analytics, then you're fine. They're definitely going to go after anyone that's selling any advertising against the existing Twitter stream. And I'm sure that'll be paid tweets and that kind of stuff too. So Twitter's looking like it's time to make some money. And this is the basically, now, of course, I have this link to All Things Digital article and also the article over on the actual blog at Twitter as well. Those of you that are Android users, Adobe Reader has been introduced for the Android. And, of course, we had some cool Adobe news last week, but the Adobe Reader for Android is now available. And offers multi-touch gestures like pinch and zoom, as well as double tap zoom. flick scrolling and panning. And they've also added a reflow mode, which will take text-heavy documents with wide margins and automatically wrap the content for easy viewing on smaller screens. There's a demo of this over at blogs.adobe.com. I have a link up to this in the show notes. But Adobe's trying to, maintain their, at least some semblance of stuff being on a variety of phones, and at least Adobe's playing with them. All right, looks like that Steve Jobs is going to be kicking off the Worldwide Developers Conference with a keynote address on Monday, June 7th. I'm actually going to be flying to Dallas that day. I actually get into Dallas, I think, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, so I'm going to miss that. But this year's WWDC is sold out. It's got over 5,000 developers attending. The 5-day event running from June 7th to June 11th is focused on providing advanced content for skilled developers across 5 key technology tracks: application framework, internet and web, graphics and media, developer tools, and core OS. And then they're going to have Apple engineers are going to deliver over 100 solutions-oriented technical sessions. So it should be a big week, but they're contemplating that Jobs may announce the iPhone version, the iPhone 4, at that event. So we'll keep you advised on that. Hey, how many of you have ever used a website called 6pm.com? Well, I tell you, after their screw up this past weekend, I wish I'd have been shopping over there. It appears that 6pm.com made a huge pricing mistake where everything on the site was priced at $49.95. And while this error was in place, they lost over $1.6 million. And yes, they're going to honor every one of the orders. You know, why am I not on a website when something like that happens? Every big screen TVs, GPS receivers, you name it, was all on sale for $49.95. And that wasn't, the right price. Now, according to their announcement on their blog, they say every day the site highlights discounts on products ranging up to 70% off. They go on to say, well, this morning we made a big mistake. Our pricing engine that capped everything on the site to $49.95. And the mistake started at midnight and went on to 6 a.m. PST. So I imagine people that were out in Honolulu and places like this were in a little different time zone that went to 6pm.com probably definitely did some heavy shopping. Now, I don't know what they normally sell, but what would you do? I'd love to hear what you would do if you found everything on a website priced at $49.95. Would you break your credit card buying stuff, thinking that they probably wouldn't honor the pricing? But they did. They honored every item sold. And I don't know how big they are, but someone cashed in. Someone cashed in a big, big way. They really, really did. So, they probably got as much free advertising out of the pricing issue than what they actually lost. Here they are I'm talking about on this show. All right, Facebook continues to get just hammered, and they're trying to do some damage control here with some announcements. But an article over on The Atlantic, and this is the first time I think I've linked to this website at theatlantic.com, Facebook doesn't adhere to its stated principles. Of course, we know that Facebook has faced backlashes on stuff they've done before and what they've currently done. But their stated principles are really 3 key elements. Number 1, they say you have control over how your information is shared. Number 2, we do not share your personal information with people or services you don't want. Now, we know that's not true. We know that they were sharing with advertisers a lot of information. Number 3, we do not give advertisers access to your personal information. Well, didn't the Wall Street Journal just call them out on this? And, they have stated principles, but they're obviously not living up to them. How many of you have closed your Facebook account? How many of you have went in and made changes to the privacy settings? Well, on top of that, over the weekend, Facebook had some security issues where there was a message basically going around saying, hey, check out this Brazilian bikini babe. And when they launched the page, they were basically tried to install adware or malware on your computer. And this went on for a while. And they finally got a handle on that. But they did announce that they were going to be making some changes. Actually, Robert Scoble has an article up on his website that shows the actual. And actually, you know what happens here? I have to stop and actually readjust my chair. I've got a one of those pads underneath my desk that is protects the carpet, but it's a plastic, just one of those, you know, it's one of those plastic things you buy at office stores, and the chair starts settling into the plastic, and it drives me crazy because I want to move the position of the chair around from time to time, and it just always doesn't work out that way. And I saw a place that sold actually glass ones. They're really expensive, but man, after dealing with this plastic thing, it's driving me nuts because it develops pockets, and then you end up in the same exact spot every day, which is not good for for carpal tunnel and everything else. But anyway, going back to Facebook, they're going to be updating, putting up a new clear information on a page you'd be able to load and make all the selections for the privacy right there. It's supposed to be out sometime later this week. All right, NASA has really been heavy at work with some of its satellites or some of its, some of its missions that are going out there. And a telescope that's out there has captured an absolute stunning image, and I haven't found yet a big picture of this. So I want this for my desktop. But the photos that have been released recently were taken by the Wide Field Infrared Survey Explorer, or the WISE, a space telescope, which was launched in December on an 8-month mission to map the entire sky. It's using instruments on board that are chilled with hydrogen, and because it's able to cool the instruments to a very cold temperature, they're able to gaze more deeply into cold and dusty regions of the universe that emit most of their light at infrared wavelengths. So this image that was released at the 216th meeting of American Astronomical Society in Miami shows the what they're calling the Heart and Soul Nebula, as solar winds, gas, and dust mix to form new stars. And the Soul Nebula alone spans more than 150 light years across the constellation. Now, this is just a remarkable picture. It really is. And when you see this, I think you're going to be blown away. They're not up on Ustream. Those of you who are listening to the show, and go to this article. But one thing that I was surprised about is that this space telescope only has enough fuel to cool its instruments for a few more months. And so when the coolant runs out, the mission's over, and basically the telescope is DOA. It just blows me away that they spent all that money and they're only going to get 8 months use out of this spacecraft. So, and I wasn't aware it was that short of a mission, but pretty cool stuff here. So I have this link to you in the show notes. Next article up is talk a little bit about Safari, and specifically for those of you that are Apple users. There's been a bug in Safari for 2 years now that allows those of you that are on Macs to be vulnerable to attacks that allow websites to essentially litter a user's hard drive with thousands of malicious files. Now, it's called the Carpet Bomb Vulnerability, and it was disclosed in May of 2008 after members of Apple's security team said they didn't consider an issue. Microsoft took the unusual step at the time of advising its customers to stop using Safari. Now, Apple issued a patch for Windows versions, but never for OS X. So while the Apple folks were, kind enough to patch it for Windows users, those of you that are Mac users, you are still sitting on top of a vulnerability in Safari. So the question is, why would the browser not have been updated? Now, this was not only an issue in Safari, but it was also an issue in Firefox and in Google Chrome. And both of those browsers have been updated to protect users. But so far, Apple has essentially left those of you running on Macs to be vulnerable to this. So the question is, why? Why would they do that after 2 years? Now, maybe they think that the vulnerability is not that big of a deal, but if the folks at Firefox and Chrome have patched their browsers, why hasn't Safari been patched for Macs? That is a question that should make all of you Mac users go, it does me, because I have a number of Macs here in the house as well, but I'm running Firefox. I don't generally run Safari. Maybe that's the issue. Maybe Safari is an afterthought for most Mac users. Oh, wait, right. The Atlantis has potentially undocked from the International Space Station for the last time. And Atlantis undocked from the International Space Station at 11:22 Eastern Daylight Time on Sunday, just over 1 week after docking with the station. During this time on station, the STS-132 crew installed a new Russian lab module, performed three spacewalks, replaced batteries, installed backup communications antenna, and other tasks. Atlantis is scheduled to land on Wednesday at KSC, and this is supposed to be the last mission for Atlantis, although there is a possibility Orbiter will fly one additional mission to the station next year. So we'll watch out, see what happens there. All right, for our Irish listeners, those of you that live in Ireland, three strikes will start striking out your internet service today. The Irish Times has reported that one of the largest ISPs in the country, Eurecom, has agreed to process 50 content industry complaints each week and to disconnect users who rack up three complaints. The move has been waited months, and Eurecom voluntarily agreed to the system after being sued by the major music labels, and it had not implemented this until today. So, This is what's going to happen. Three strikes and you're out. So for those of you that are listening to the show that are using Eurecom as a internet service provider, have you switched? Are they the only choice in town? Are you worried about this? But be forewarned that they can shut you down. Now, one thing that many of you that have used Outlook for years may, you know, you're probably distinctly aware of, making the switch from Outlook to a different email service is sometimes very difficult. Luckily, when I made the switch from Outlook to Thunderbird, the site that I was getting email on allowed for IMAP. And I was basically able to push old content back into the system at the same time syncing up into Thunderbird and then walking away from Outlook forever. And but it appears that because Microsoft in February released the public specification for PST files, and PST files are the files that store all of your email in Outlook, there's going to be a number of companies that are going to be able to actually read that data now, which is cool. And at some time here in the near future, Microsoft is going to release the final SDK that's going to allow people to actually push into the PST files as well, or in other words, write to the PST files. So at some point, we're all going to be able to very easily switch between different platforms. And that's kind of cool because, sometimes you may try a software application, you may not particularly like it. Now, I'm not real happy with the latest version of Thunderbird and would consider going back to Office, for the simple fact that, the newest version of Thunderbird just isn't getting it for me. But I might be willing to try a different application. But if it does get to the point where the software development kit is released and basically developers of all sorts can read right to the PST files, it just makes a lot of sense to make that happen. And we won't be tied to the hands of Microsoft or other mail program so long as they support the PST format. So would you make the switch to a different email client if you had the ability to move your PST file to a third-party email client? Do you think this is going to spur development of a new types of email clients as well? Are we all going to get out from underneath the juggernaut of Outlook? So time will tell. Now, my mom, she likes Outlook. She really does. She likes how it's formatted. And I actually had to install Outlook on her laptop this trip out and transfer stuff from a computer that is just about ready to bite the dust. And so, you know, when you're used to something, I understand sometimes there's no desire to change and relearn, especially if you're not super computer savvy. So not against my better judgment, but to please mom, I actually installed Outlook on her computer over the weekend, got her moved over. Or let's talk a little bit about peer-to-peer. One down and five to go. A site called IsoHunt, I-S-O-H-U-N-T, has been taken offline. An American judge concerned with the staggering volume of infringement taking place at BitTorrent search site IsoHunt has issued a permanent injunction against the site and its owner, Canadian Gary Fung. Movie studios now have the green light to submit titles to IsoHunt, and those titles must not be hosted. Oh, so actually not going to take the site down, just the movie studios are going to resubmit titles to him. Now, he's in Canada, so I wonder how they're going to enforce this if it's an American judge and they're going after a site owner that's in Canada. Now, it depends on where the actual site is hosted. This is interesting that they're going to be able, I don't know how they're going to enforce this. Oh, here we go. Because the servers are based in Canada, though, it's not clear how the ruling will affect IsoHunt's worldwide operation. IsoHunt was also placed on a 6-website blacklist by numerous members of Congress and the RIAA. I guess they're going after next Ukraine's MP3 Fiesta site. Good luck on getting that shut down. So we'll have to see how this develops. You know, this, I don't know how this is going to cross over into, you know, because he is not inclined to, you know, do this on his Canadian website and his Canadian servers. Now, if it was a Canadian court, that's a different issue. But I don't see how this can actually be enforced. I really don't. Of course, I wouldn't come to the United States, dude. I really wouldn't. Be careful what you tweet. And just have to laugh. You know, people are tweeting stuff now that are, you know, causing him to lose jobs that they've just been hired for. And, you know, this, I guess with this British Airlines strike that's going on, there's been a lot of negotiations going on between the unions and British Airways. But apparently, union boss of British Airways has discovered the perils of using Twitter because he has been twittering during the negotiations, and it hasn't been relatively positive. So the British Airway chief executive is not real happy that this gentleman has been sharing private negotiation information over his Twitter account. So I guess, what did he think he was doing? Did he think he was texting his buddy on the during the conferences? Who knows? Another article on the BBC, 7 Atom transistors set the pace for future PCs. I don't know if we covered this already, if this is just mainstream media picking this up. This almost sounds like something that we've talked about in a previous show. We know transistors really are the lifeblood of computers. But a 7-atom transistor could revolutionize, if they're able to productionize it, could really revolutionize computing. Australian creators of the transistor hope it also a step towards a solid-state quantum computer. So if these new atomic transmitters can be made in large numbers, it could mean chips with components up to 100 times smaller than on existing processors. And that's amazing. On chips where components are 22 nanometers in size, transistor gates are about 42 atoms across. So that gives you an idea of the size savings. The working transistor was created by replacing seven atoms in a silicon crystal with phosphorus atoms. And the team has demonstrated the world's first electronic device in silicon systematically created on a scale of individual atoms, said Professor Michelle Simmons, lead researcher on the project at the University of New South Wales. But crazy stuff in electronic sites. So, you know, Moore's Law, it's, you know, I think we're just continuing to march here as scientists come up with more stuff. Hey, I got to share some pictures with you. And these were over on CNET. It's just amazing. And I'll bring these up for those of you on Ustream as well. And these are some Space Shuttle Atlantis final mission photos. And truly, some just absolutely remarkable pictures. And I have to laugh in here because you look inside the space shuttle and it's it has got the traditional navy gray control panels and everything. It just so reminds me, no matter how far we come, how things remain the same. And you can see a very sophisticated speaker in one of the pictures, and but some terrific pictures of Atlantis docked at the International Space Station, and the old girl showing her age, but just totally remarkable pictures, and how we all wouldn't give a lot of money to go into space. It's amazing, amazing frontier, that's for sure. But cool stuff. Anyway, link will be up in the show notes. You guys check these pictures out. You know, we all can eat this stuff up. At least I can all day long. Just, and if you look real close at the pictures and zoom in on some stuff, sometimes you see where engineering has went into the development of all the subsystems they have in space. And it's pretty amazing what they have hauled up there with the space shuttle and other lift vehicles. All right, sad news on the Mars front. The NASA Phoenix Mars lander appears to be damaged. And we know that the Phoenix Mars lander was not expected to survive as it was facing, a deep temperature drop and the extremes of the Mars winter. And it looks like from the pictures that have been captured by the NASA Mars Odyssey orbiter, it looks like the solar panels are just gone or ripped off the device. And so they are not going to try to contact the Phoenix Mars lander anymore. It's officially considered a rip, and they didn't expect to be able to connect to it. But they made the solar panels in such a way that really if there had been any weight whatsoever placed on top of them, there wasn't a very high survival chance on the lander. So the Martian winter got the better of the device, and but it did its job while it was in operation. So it was another successful mission, but she's done. It appears the Japanese are working on a disc 1,000 times larger than Blu-ray. Japanese researchers, and this is according to digitaltrends.com, researchers in Japan have found a new material for optical storage that is easy to manufacture, safe to use, and it could increase disk capacity by over 1,000 times over single Blu-ray disk. To put this in perspective, a blank DVD can hold 4.7 gigs, while an average Blu-ray single-layer disk can hold 25 gigs, while the dual-layer, of course, will store 50. But this new Blu-ray disk could have storage up to 128 gigs of data per disk. And this entails a breakthrough in data storage. But, excuse me, the Blu-ray Association recently announced that there would be a new series of Blu-ray discs coming that would store up to 128 gigs. Okay, now this is what was hailed as a breakthrough, but these new discs, I thought the math was on this was wrong, the new disc would be able to contain 25,000 gigs of data or 25 terabytes per disc. How long do you think it would take to write 25 terabytes to a disc? The material is a new crystalline form of titanium oxide. The lead researcher described in an interview as being as promising as material for next generation of optical storage device. 25 terabytes on a single disk. That's a lot. Now, will that make it into the average Joe consumer's home? I don't know. Hey, how many of you have been to Yankee Stadium? Well, if you go to Yankee Stadium, don't take your iPad. Your iPad is not welcome at the at Yankee Stadium. They have classified the iPad at the Yankee Stadium as why did I have that up there all that time? They have classified the iPad as a computer. So the iPad is seen as a possibly dangerous item. And so the Yankee Stadium security says that it's going to prohibit it being brought into the park. Although some people have snuck them in backpacks and so forth. But if you're going to the ball game, don't take your iPad, okay? All right, National Public Radio is reporting that the NASA Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter is doing such a good photographing every bit of the moon's surface that NASA scientists can't keep up. So what's happening here is team members from the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter are asking amateur astronomers to help review, measure, and classify tens of thousands of moon photos streaming to Earth using the website Moon Zoo. Now, this is where anyone can log in and get trained and become a space explorer. And what they're asking people to do is count the craters that they see and tell us all sorts of things about the history that tells them all sorts of things about the history and age of that bit of the surface. Volunteers are also being asked to identify boulders, measure the craters, and generally classify what is found in the images. If one person does the classification, even if they're an expert, then anything odd or interesting can be blamed on them. But with multiple independent classifications, a team can statistically calculate the confidence in the classification. In other words, more than one person looks at a picture, they take the statistical average of what each have submitted, and they get a good data point. So if you want to spend time looking at craters of the moon and counting rocks, they need you over at moonzoo.com. Let's think about that for a second. Counting rocks and measuring craters. What do I have to do on a Sunday afternoon? Measure rocks and count craters. No. Unless you're dedicated, I don't think you're going to want to do this. HP tried to explain recently why printer ink is so expensive. Apparently, they went through a multi-page PowerPoint presentation trying to explain why printer ink was so expensive. And a reporter from Computer World was there to see this. And here was the key point. And we all know what the answer to this already. The key point in a nutshell, ink technology is expensive to develop. And you pay for reliability and image qualities. These liquids are completely different from a technology standpoint, Brown says, adding that users concerned about cost per page can buy the extra large ink cartridge from HP that lasts 2 to 3 times longer. The message here was you get value for the money. No getting around it, though. Ink is still expensive, so particularly if you have to use that PhotoSmart Jet printer for black and white text message pages. So it's all about the technology. It's not about the ink. Remember, ink is worth more its weight in gold than gold is. Did I say that right? It's worth more than gold and its equivalent weight. Yeah, there we go. All right, everyone, if you haven't read a Mark Twain book as a child, then you really missed a classic. Well, it appears, and I didn't know this was the issue, but before Mark Twain's death, he requested in his will that his personally written autobiography, which covers a little over 5,000 unedited pages, would not be published for at least 100 years after his death. So there's going to be released shortly a manuscript that will be the first volume of Mark Twain's 3-volume autobiography. And so they're going to release this. And I guess the reason he wanted to wait 100 years is because he wanted to talk freely about issues such as religion and politics. And he didn't feel he could do it in the, you know, it wouldn't do his reputation good to do it and have it released while he, just after he died. So it ought to be interesting reading. And we'll see what happens with the how the autobiography sells. But if you're a Mark Twain fan, which actually was Twain was the pen name of Samuel Clemens, we'll see what this has to say. I'm sure it's going to get some serious reviews. All right, a student has sued a school for privacy invasion after school found her nude photos on her phone. No, they didn't hack her phone. They confiscated her phone when she was using it in class when she wasn't supposed to be. So instead of just shutting it off and waiting for the parents to pick it up or whatever they did, the school officials searched through her phone and found nude pictures of herself in there. And she may be charged with child porn for taking pictures of herself. Huh. Can you believe this? They have this gal's got it. Okay, first of all, don't let your kids take pictures of themselves naked. Second of all, here you've got this gal. She's lost her phone because, or got her phone taken away by the school. Then the school looks through the phone, finds nude pictures of her in there, turns it over to authorities. Now, fortunately, a judge had the common sense to halt the potential. This is amazing. Local prosecutor wanted to file charges. Apparently, girls in question were given a choice: take a re-education class or face charges. So the girls have retained an attorney and are now suing the school district themselves for invasion of privacy. Bravo. Now, on more insane things going on in the world, China has decided that photocopiers are evil if they're in Tibet. The authorities in Tibet apparently see printing and photocopying shops as potential channels through which unrest can spread. One Chinese print shop operator, who is of the majority Han ethnicity rather than Tibetan, said that her husband has been summoned to a meeting last week on the new requirements. They are making them take names and addresses and recording personal information of everyone that creates copies at photocopying companies. Wow. Yeah. Copies of some stuff. You know, what's, don't they have printers in China? Oh, they probably can't afford that ink, right, from HP? But, wow. Yes, Red China, folks. Now, there's a lawsuit that has been filed against Warner Brothers by a tech company in Japan who said that Warner Brothers has copied its anti-piracy technology. It's a patent infringement lawsuit. And so basically the anti-piracy company is saying that Warner Brothers, it copied their anti-piracy technology. So they're suing them for patent infringement. That serves them right. Got a good article here from Wired Magazine on, this is another space article. I won't go into this in too much detail. I had it earlier in the content, but it's basically the full checklist that NASA folks go through in launching a space shuttle. Some real heavy reading there. There's a class action suit that would let you unlock almost any AT&T handset except for the iPhone. Appears that a class action lawsuit in California is on the cusp of coming to resolution, and the resolution will require AT&T to provide an unlock code for just about any phone that is sold since March 12th of 1999. Does anyone have a phone from March of 1999? But it exempts any phones that have been sold by AT&T, I think, within the last, does it give a time frame? It doesn't, but the iPhone is exempt from this class action lawsuit. Appears that the next Apple iPhone will have video chat, and there's a bunch of people twittering about going to an audition that for a commercial that has something to do with video conferencing. So it appears again that the next iPhone will have video chat. As we've been talking about, there might be a forward-facing camera. In other words, you can a camera on the backside and a camera on the front. Apple is discontinuing iPhone 3G 8-gigabyte version of the phone. So you're no longer going to be able to get an 8-gig iPhone. We'll see what happens there. I know Walmart's reduced their price of all their remaining 3G phones to some ridiculously low price, $99. Another sign that the new phone is coming. Over on the Washington Post, let me look at the time here. We're doing okay. Key Democratic lawmakers call for a rewrite of the 1996 Telecommunications Act. And really what this is involving is it looks like that 74 Democrats have written a letter to the FCC chairman opposing the plan to redefine broadband. And instead, they want to write new laws to redefine broadband, which could work in the FCC's favor. The lawmaker said that starting in June, they will invite stakeholders to participate in bipartisan. Okay, I'm sure it'll be bipartisan. Nothing is bipartisan in Washington, D.C. To participate in bipartisan meetings to address issues and concerns over federal oversight of internet services and businesses. They said their offices will release a list of topics for discussion and details on how they will go about updating the 1996 Telecommunications Act. And again, this move comes amid increased uncertainty over the government's role as watchdog for internet service providers such as AT&T and Comcast. So apparently a Senate staffer who was not authorized to speak on the record said the announcement is a recognition that current law doesn't reflect the changing landscape of the web and mobile-centric communications. The staffer said the move was meant to complement the FCC's broadband reclassification proposal. The lawmakers don't intend, as proposed by some network operators, to preempt the FCC's plan. So, again, Washington Post have the link up to the full article on this, but looks like legislators are going to get in the act. You guys remember we talked about Elgato from time to time? Well, Elgato has put together, it's called iTV. The device grabs, let me bring this up on the other screen. This was an article over on Engadget. And I've gotten some of their stuff from time to time. I guess I haven't got any new stuff from them in a while. But the Elgato grabs a 1080i signal over a component from your DVR cable box or Blu-ray player and records that video to your Mac using Elgato's own desktop DVR software. The shows can then be auto-transcoded into iPhone or iPad-friendly media, providing a much needed, you know, basically it gives you access to content that you've been able to get off the TV. It also has the ability to do live streaming. The device can push a live video feed to either iPad or your iPhone using an IR blaster you can change channel on your cable box. This retails for about $200. Elgato's been pretty famous in the video world as far as on the Mac side for a while. You do have to connect your Mac to the iTV device from Elgato and your cable box. So there is, you know, before you go out and rush out and buy one of these things, read up on how this thing hooks up. They've got a video on it as well. So link up to that and be the show notes. Let me come back off that page. Gizmodo has an article about speed tests showing Flash 10.1 slowing down Android 2.2. We talked about, Steve Jobs has been complaining that Flash is a memory pig on mobile devices, and the folks over at Gizmodo have definitely ruled that that is an issue with Android 2.2 and using Flash on the Froyo site. So I'll have the link up to that article in the show notes. Scoble's got a pretty good article on from a company called Soluto, S-O-L-U-T-O. It's a company out of Israel. And wait to see this video. You got to watch this. It is pretty amazing. And if you're a Windows fanboy and you've used Windows for a long time, but yet you would like to modify how Windows loads certain things, you've got to see what they've done. They call it Soluto, anti-frustration software. And Skull predicts they'll be bought very, very quickly. And again, I'll have the link up in the show notes for it. Watch the video. And you also want to watch a video called from a company called SkyGrid. It's a new kind of news stream company that's taking on big guys like Bloomberg, Associated Press, and Google. So pretty exciting stuff there by a variety of companies doing some advanced stuff on the net. All right, that's all I've got for regular content tonight. Let me go ahead and get into the email real quick. No voicemails tonight. So if you want to leave a comment about the show, you can do so by calling the voicemail hotline 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at +1-619-342-7365. Of course, geeknews@gmail.com is the email address you can send stuff to. First email up tonight is from Ian. And he said, "Hey, Todd, thank you for reminding your audience about the dangers of cell phone use while driving. A little over 5 years ago, a very good friend of mine was broadsided by a woman who ran a red light. She was too busy talking on her cell phone to notice the red light. She hit full speed. She didn't even attempt to use the brake. She hit the driver's side of my friend's car. The force of impact actually pushed my friend's car off the road onto the sidewalk. Needless to say, my friend's car was totaled. But the real damage was to the driver who was hit. They were taken to the hospital where they lapsed into a coma. While they were in coma, they had brain swelling and neurosurgery was required to relieve the pressure. Despite the surgery, there was still brain damage. In one sense, a person I knew died that day. Even though they looked normal, they have never been the same since. Short-term memory is all but gone, and long-term memory has significant gaps. They had to learn to do a lot of the things over again. I don't think they'll ever work again. Needless to say, when I see somebody talking on a cell phone and driving, my blood boils. This accident ruined a good person's life, and it was completely and utterly preventable. No phone calls is so important that it can't wait for you to pull over or until you get to your destination. Once again, thanks for the reminder, Ian. And Ian, thanks for sending that email in. It's a good reminder for all of us. And by that, you know, by doing that, those tests at Ford made me really say, wow, there is the potential there for something very bad to happen with looking down at a text message or trying to dial a phone. By looking at it, it really drove it home. It really, really did. Got an email from Bama Jeff. He said, "Hey, Todd, deadly hearing arrives in the United States." He has a link to a website. I'll look at this before we put it up. Thanks for that, Bama. Obviously we don't want people to do drugs, but send me the direct link next time, not the overall website address, but thanks for the link there. Got an email from Brie. She says, "Hey, Todd, I listened to the Aussie Geek podcast on the latest one of their listeners sent in a rant on all the electronic book readers, which I thought was excellent. Now, I know how much you love your Kindle, but please give his audio file a listen. If you read below, you'll see that I asked God permission to send it to you. Also, if you use it, he would like to listen. The Hearn is quite a techie from Canada." And Brie, I did not preload this, so I'll save this for the next show, and then I'll actually play it on the next show, but I'll put a link up to it in the show notes. I don't know if the Dropbox is how long it's going to be available. But anyway, I'll have this up and we'll get this covered in the next show. I didn't download this already, so apologize for that. Got an email from Nier. He said, "Hey, Todd, following his response I received from Roko, I suppose it may interest some of your international customers. The only way to use it offshore would be via some proxy, I assume. The message you got from Roku was, 'Thank you for contacting Roku customer service. My name is Ron Jenny, and I will be helping you with your query. As of now, Roku can only be used in the USA. In future, we are looking forward to extend our services to foreign countries. Please feel free to email us for further queries. Thank you for providing us with the opportunity to assist you, and thank you for choosing Roku customer service." Has anybody used a Roku outside the United States yet? Let me know if you have. Todd, here's a link you may find interesting. He said, this is Rory from Dublin, Ireland, and he basically covers the same thing we covered earlier in the show about Earcom. Three strikes and you're out of internet service. So thanks for that, Rory, that email. Got an email here, email from Trucker Tom. He says, "Stealth IRS changes means millions of new tax forms. And this is an article that was over on Money at CNN.com. And this is some amazing stuff, folks. You have got to read this article. If you are a business person, this new requirement that was hidden in the health reform bill is going to be a massive, massive, massive burden to anyone that does any form of business. Essentially, what you're going to have to do is file 1099-K. It's a new form, 1099-K, to anyone that you do any business with. It's if you do PayPal, credit cards, if you have a direct service company like an internet service provider. So you're going to have a phone service 1099. You're going to have to send a 1099 to your phone company. You're going to have to send a 1099 to your computer service company. You're going to have, if you do have a postage use service, you're going to have to send a 1099 to them. If you do advertising, you have to send a 1099. If you pay a landlord for your rent on your office building, you have to send them a 1099. This is if you do more than $600 with anybody for any reason for service with a company where normally you never would have to do that before, you're going to have to send them a 1099. This is ridiculous. The rule comes with a floor to weed out the most casual retailers. The 1099K is only required when a merchant has at least 200 payment transactions a year, totaling more than $20,000. What company doesn't have at least 200 payment transactions a year? But it applies to all payment processors, including PayPal, Amazon, and others that serve very small businesses. The goal of the new regulation is to catch income that is going unreported by the IRS. Okay. Be 1099 heaven. I can see this causing me to spend a lot of money with my tax preparer. Got an email here from someone on YouTube. Say, hey, Todd, brought your book several years ago. Great book. Enjoy your insight, info on podcast. Question, how do you get 1 hour videos on YouTube? I thought I had a 10 minute limit. I was lucky. Basically, I got a producer's account years ago, and I don't know if they're still available or not, but been grandfathered in. So I just consider myself lucky to have it. That's it. That's all I've got for email comments tonight. We're right here at the end of the show. Thanks, everybody, for hanging out with me. Those of you on Ustream, thanks for hanging out as well. Again, no voicemail comments tonight or no hotline comments. If you have comments on the show, dial in at 619-342-7365. It's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for you to rant, rave, leave comment, and so forth. And geeknews@gmail.com is where you send an email on the show as well. If you have a great article for me, send me a link to that. We'll provide a link back to the article in the show notes. And comments, of course, are always read. Thanks for hanging out with me. It's been a lot of fun. Great to be back in Honolulu. Be here for at least 2 weeks, which is, for this year, is a long time being at home, which is fine with me and fine with my wife and kids, too. But then we'll be on a two-week trip, and after that, I'm going to be home for a while. So looking forward to kind of slowing down here in the second half of the year. Already have 75,000 frequent flyer miles, and it's not even June yet. So that's pretty crazy stuff on my part. But everyone take care. We'll see you on Thursday night for the live recording. Of course, the show will be released Friday. Again, tell your friends and family members about the show. Share this podcast with everyone you know so we can continue to build the audience out. If you've watched me on Roku all the way to the end, thanks for watching all the way. I appreciate it. And check us out in a couple days. Wait for you. Everyone take care and aloha.